In the book of Luke, the 14th chapter and the 25th verse, the Bible says this, "And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it, lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation, is not able to finish it. All that behold it begin to mock him, saying, This man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and counteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if the salt had lost its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land, nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear." You know, Jameson and I get along good, and I know why. He likes to call auctions, and I like to bid at them. And so that seemed like just a perfect match. And I've gone to lots of auctions over the years, and usually mine dealt with horses and horse equipment and cattle and stuff like that. If you go into the stock market, now we're going from an auction to the stock market. Stay with me on this one. There's a sign above the door, and it's in, I believe, Latin. And I cannot quote the Latin saying. Some of you might can. I know the translation, though, because you're walking into this great, magnificent Roman Greco building, as they call it, and it's got that Latin above it, and it's spectacular. Do you know what it translates to? Let the buyer beware. And that's kind of the way it works at auctions, too. You got to kind of let the buyer beware. I've gone to horse auctions, and they have that horse in the ring, and I mean, he handles like a dream, and you get him home, saddle him up, you got to take him to the airport to turn him around, or the drugs wear off. And that's always a fun one, you know. Anybody, gentle for anybody, and they got some kid out there riding. What they didn't tell you is this kid's a world champion, you know, and so you get him home and he's not really all. Let the buyer beware. You know what most people do when they go to auctions? They get there a little early and they start looking at things and they start looking it over. And I'm talking about with equipment, stuff like that, and horses and cattle. They start looking. You know what they're doing? They're counting the cost. What is this thing worth? What will it do? Now, most auction buyers are eternal optimists, I'll tell you that. I bought a pickup at an auction one time, and the guy sold it, I got it for a bargain. And I thought, man, I can pull my trailers with it, work it on the farm and all that. I didn't get out of the parking lot before it cratered on me. Might should have counted the cost a little bit more. I want to talk to you about counting the cost. It's one thing to count the cost when you're dealing with horses or cows or implements and things like that. It's another thing to talk about it when you're dealing with your life and your soul. And that's what Jesus was getting at. He told them what it was going to cost, what it was going to cost to be a Christian. But it's going to cost you something not to be a Christian as well. There is going to be a cost that has to be paid. You know what counting the cost means? Sit down, evaluate it, think it through. See what it really is. Look it over. What's it going to cost me to be a Christian? Is it a good deal? What is it going to cost me not to be a Christian? Is that a good deal? There is a cost to doing that. 2 Corinthians 13:5 says, "Examine yourselves whether you be in the faith." Do we ever take an inventory? Do we sit down and evaluate ourselves? Do we sit down and examine ourselves whether we be in the faith? He said, "What? Know you not your own heart? You know your heart. You know where your heart is." You know, I really believe the difference in Peter and Judas and the way things turned out for them was the heart. God knows your heart. You know your heart. Sit down, count the cost, evaluate, think it through. You know, years ago, I always kicked myself because there's this company called Chrysler. And they went into the tank, shall we say. And some of y'all are old enough to remember this. And you could have bought all the Dodge pickups you wanted, the stock in them, for probably around 75 cents, dollar, maybe. I know it got down below $2 a share. And I thought, man, you'd have to be crazy to get in there and go buy that stuff. I didn't know that guy named Lee Iacocca. And I didn't know the government was going to bail him out. And I didn't know that this thing would have been, well, you wouldn't have had to work very much after you did that. See, sometimes it works out. But then again, there's been other times it didn't work out. But you examine things. There's people that spend their life doing that. And I'm talking financially. They spend their life trying to come up with formulas. And most of them make more money selling you the book about the formula than they do working the formula itself. But be that as it may, have we sat down and counted the cost? Have we examined ourselves? How often we do this? How we do it? You know, I spent yesterday doing something that I absolutely detest. I'm in the pest control business at home. And I like my business, and I like the people and that I work for, and I like the job and all that. But I'm more of a don't worry about the mule being blind, just load the wagon guy. Now, Bev is an accountant, and she dots the I's and crosses the T's, and she goes, where's the paperwork on this one? I go, oh, I'll get it later. No, you don't. There's no date on this. When did you do it? A while back. You know, the government doesn't buy that kind of stuff. She wants to evaluate things. She goes, you got to have a piece of paper for everything you do. And so now she got me this thing on your phone where you take pictures of your papers and stuff like that, and then she can do with it whatever it is she does with it and keep us out of trouble, I suppose. And I hate to say this, but I sit down like I did Saturday. We all were getting ready for the Jubilee, and I'm taking my picture and things like that, and Bev's only got 139 behind. Now, she should be catching up sometime next year. And so, no problem, girl, you know. I don't like to do that. And so if you ask me, how's the business doing? We're doing great. That's going good. I'm working all the time. And Bev will go, well, maybe we ought to look at this a little bit. I don't tend to sit down and do a daily evaluation or a monthly evaluation. I don't have a clue what we make, to be honest with you. I just know if I want something, I buy it. And Bev goes, that's a terrible plan. That's horrible. You know, I figure, well, we'll get it somewhere. She likes to count the cost. She likes to know what she's doing. Do you do that? Do we do that with our spiritual life? Every now and then we need to sit down and examine ourselves where we're at, whether we be in the faith or not. And we know our own heart. In Romans 12, he says, for us to not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind. We can prove what is that good and acceptable will of God. Do we sit down and think about that? Do we think it through? What's it costing you? What's it cost you not to do that? Are you like me with my business where I just kind of plod through life and praise the Lord, I married somebody that can count? Is that what we do? There's people counting on the preacher to get them to heaven. Y'all know that. There's people counting on their ancestry, mom and dad, to get us to heaven. But they don't sit down and count the cost for themselves. You know, he said this guy started to build about verse 26, but he has to count the cost lest happily after he started to build, he's not able to finish. And everybody walks by and mocks it. He began to build and could not finish. You know, we had a place like that at home. There was a real nice house in our area that was being built. And I mean, it was a dandy. And then the older fella died and the family got in a fight. And you know what they got? They got the roof on that thing. They got the windows cut out. And back in this day, when they did this, they put a tar paper, I call it tar paper, T-A-R, not T-I-R-E, paper around that house. And then they stopped. And everybody drive by and go, that's a shame. Because they got in a fight over who's going to get it, actually, is what stopped the building program. And you got the lawyers involved and the government involved and all this kind of stuff, and it did. And eventually, you know what they did with that thing? They bulldozed it. It rotted. It went down. You know, but every time you go by there, you would say, man, that's terrible. Look what happened there. That's what he's talking about with our life. Are we able to finish it? Folks, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. This is a lifelong commitment that you've made to the Lord. And there is no stopping point. There is no quitting point. Be thou faithful unto death, and I'll give you a crown of life, Revelation 2:10. You started it, you finished. Let us run the race with patience. Put away the weights of sin that so easily does beset us, the book of Hebrews tells us. Are you able to finish it? You know, I've known people that start stuff and are bad about starting projects, and we know people like this all the time. And in life, most of the time, it's maybe irritating, but it's not a big deal, really. But they'll start a project and get it pretty well going. And, you know, Bev has learned with Marlon, if he's building something, you don't move into the house until he's completely done. Because that's how you wind up with no floor coverings and no trim and no windows, stuff like that. But it's dry. I mean, it works. I mean, but we didn't finish it out. And no, a lot of times you have to wait and see, is this thing get finished? Did this thing get done? You know, and we've known people that don't finish stuff. When I was in high school, we got within 2 weeks of our graduation, we had a young man quit. He'd been there since kindergarten in that one little school. And of course, we all knew him well. And he quit and walked away from high school. He had had all that he wanted, because he was going to get wealthy selling vacuum cleaners. And there's people that have got wealthy selling vacuum cleaners. You got to give them that now. And there's nothing wrong with selling vacuum cleaners. The problem is, about 3 months after we graduated, school was out, he was looking for a job. He wasn't a vacuum cleaner salesman. Now, maybe somebody is. But he got within 2 weeks and he quit. You know, that's almost scoring the winning touchdown. Watching the news the other day, and I don't remember which one of the stations it was on, but they showed this kid, and he's driving down, and it's at the buzzer, and the thing's going up, and he just chunked that thing, and it went in. You know, almost winning is losing. Almost making it is not finishing. I've only quit in sports. I only quit one time in my whole life. And it was the worst day I thought I'd ever experienced. And I will never forget the feeling of letting my team down, my coach down, everybody in the school down. I ran the mile run. That's hard to believe, but I did. And the milers were always the last ones to run. And so we would wait all day long for our race to come up. Now, my mama loved her baby. I want you to know that. And she knew her baby would get hungry. And mama would fix me food to eat. And she fixed me 4 fried hot dogs with mustard, a family bag of potato chips, and a giant RC cola. I love my mama. Well, I ate that all day long. I thought one of the best. You know, I watched the other track and field stuff going on, walking around, eating my bag of chips and eating my hot dogs and stuff. We lined up to run, and about the third race, them hot dogs came back. That third lap of that race, it's a 4-lap, and the third one, I'm laying on the infield out there because I'm done. You know, there was no cheering, there was no ribbons, there was no awards. I didn't finish the race. I remember the coach looking, going, "Where'd he go?" And for 2 laps, I was leading the thing. And the last one, I'm laid out on the infield. You able to finish? Are we going to go the distance? Now, in a track and field race, that's not no big deal. It's something like that in sports or even in high school thing. I mean, it affects the future, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it's not going to be the end of the world. But what if you don't finish the race as a Christian? Paul said, "I finished the course. I fought a good fight. I kept the faith. Henceforth, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness to those that finish the race." Now, what's the moral of this story? Don't quit. Don't stop. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care what you're involved in. I don't care what you're planning on doing. Don't quit the Lord. Don't stop. So Somebody said, well, Martin, you believe that just going to church, long, you know, we can go do whatever we want to, as long as we just go to church, we're going to be okay. No, but if you quit, you got no chance. At least if you come and you stay and you listen and you read and you pray and you study and you're around Christian people, you got a chance. You walk away, you got zero chance. Don't quit. Finish the race. You need to ask yourself, what is the value of this? What would you pay for the seat that you're sitting on? I thought we should have auctioned off tickets to this. Of course, nobody would have bought them, but at any rate, we should have done that, you know, because I mean, but what would you pay to be here? Well, if we had good preaching, I might give a few dollars, you know, something like that. Outside of that, you know, people have paid a terrible price to do what you're doing. People are paying a terrible price, not in the past, but right now, to do what you're doing. There are people that are risking life and limb, literally, just to come break bread, read the Bible, and sing praises and pray to their God in parts of the world. What price are you willing to pay? What's the value of your seat? Jesus said, what's a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? What do you give in exchange for your soul? What are you going to pay God? Nothing. You got nothing. You can gain the whole world and lose your own soul. In Matthew 13, he gives a parable about a guy that's plowing in a field, and I can appreciate this. And this never happens to me. Mine, I've hit stuff with the plow before. Don't get me wrong. I understand that concept. And you stop up, and I always get out there and spray. It's a treasure chest. Mine's always a rock. But this guy hit a treasure chest. And man, this is great. He buries it, goes, sells all that he has, and buys that field. Because that field with that treasure chest in it is worth more than everything he's got. Now, one of the boys, I forget which one it was, I think it was Ian Jones, they do this PowerPoint thing. I used to say, I've never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul, but they Googled a picture of a hearse pulling a U-Haul, so I can't say that anymore. You know what I mean? What do you got that's worth more than your soul? He said, the kingdom of heaven. What have you got that's more important than where you're sitting in the kingdom of God? What would you trade the kingdom for? Now, when I first come into the church years and years ago, we had a little elder that sat there on the, they all used to sit on the very front row. And I come up to him and I said, Brother Archie, I need a visit with you. I got a problem that I'm facing. And he goes, okay, sit down. So I sat down. He said, what is it? I said, Brother Archie, I got a chance to go to work for a company, and I'll make more money than we've ever made in our life. More money than I've ever seen. And he goes, and I got to work on Sundays. And he goes, well, I'll tell you something, son. I've walked away from a lot of jobs so I can go to church. And then he got up and walked out. I thought we were going to have a discussion. Apparently, we'd had the discussion. But you know, those words, I thought about them and I thought about them. I finally went into the company that was going to hire me, and I said, I can't take this job. They said, why not? I said, I go to church. I go at 10:30 in the morning, and I go for about an hour. And they said, well, just take off for that on Sunday morning, work extra. It worked out. Now, it doesn't always work out like that. What would I have done if they said, well, we can't use you? Sometimes that happens, doesn't it? Would you walk, or do you take the dollars? What do you think seek the kingdom first and his righteousness means? I'll tell you what it's meant to me over the years. Every now and then I have a young couple come up, and they are going to move off, and they're going to do what I was thinking about doing way back when. And they're going to have great schools for their kids, and they're going to have wheelbarrows to push their money around, and they're going to live the high life like they've never lived before. And you ask them, where are you going to go to church? Oh, we'll find something. And every now and then I run into a young couple, and they're going, we're going down here. Why are you going? Because we love the church. It's got a good church. We love those brethren down there, and we want to be with them. What are you going to do for a living? We'll find something. Who do you think seeking the kingdom first? What do you think he means by that? Are we seeking God's kingdom first? Is this the most valuable thing we got? What's the value? What value would you place on that? Through the centuries, and I'm not talking about the Lord dying on the cross. That's the ultimate price. I'm not talking about the apostles giving their lives to get us the word. I'm talking about normal, everyday human being brethren that were put to death just to do what we do. How valuable is this to you? I hope it has a lot of value. I hope it's a lot of value to you. Now, let me give you something going down right now. And I'm not preaching politics to you. I don't want to get into politics. But it seems to be there's two kinds of thoughts out there. There's folks running, and everything's going to be free. I mean, it's going to be great. You get free education. You're going to get free housing. You're going to get a free car. You're going to get all kinds of medical stuff's going to be free. It's all going to be free. You look a little skeptical, brethren. You know why? Because you all know, you're all thinking the same thing that I'm fixing to tell you. Nothing's free. There is no such. I got a guy, I've got a little travel trailer. Took it to our preacher powwow, first time I'd pulled it. And this guy goes, it's free. If you can get out of my pasture, you can have it. By the time I got it out of the pasture and I put the thing back together and I put floors in it and got all the, you give me one more free thing and I'm going broke. It's not free. Free stuff is, you look at it. Oh, hey, you come in here and we're going to give you a free Coke with this meal. You think a free Coke, that's cool. It's not free. My favorite is free shipping. It's free shipping. But now that, if you get to buying things, you can buy auctions online, Jameson. You need to get into that, buddy. And you can get free stuff if they'll pay shipping and handling. This item that I got was free. But wait till you see the bill for shipping and handling. Nothing is free. And it's not free to be a Christian. It's going to cost you something. It's going to cost you everything you got. You're going to love the Lord with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. You're going to give everything. Not hold nothing back. Jesus didn't say, if I ask you to, would you be willing to give up everything and even lose your own life? He said, you'll do it. You're willing to give it all up. It cost everything. Because nothing is free. Nothing is free, even in this chapter here. Verse 33. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. If you got something that's more important than the Lord, you cannot be his disciple. And we're kidding ourselves if we think different. What do we do? The job more important than the Lord? Is for some people. The house, the cars, the bank accounts. And I know we got to live in the world. Jesus said, I'm not taking you out of the world, just don't be of the world. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. Boy, but I sure kind of like it around here. And I'm going to grab all the goodies while I can. There's nothing wrong with having things, folks. They had things in the first century. The problem is when the things are more important than your God, and it's more important than your service to the Lord. Now, I've talked about this an awful lot over in Matthew 19. And talk about, to me, this is a very human way of looking at things, and the apostles were very, very human. In verse number 27 of Matthew 19, then answered Peter and said unto him, behold, we have forsaken all and followed thee. What shall we have therefore? What's in it for us, Lord? What do we get out of this? You ever asked yourself that? You know, every now and then when you're an evangelist, you're going, what was I thinking? Then you decide, you know, then some of us that became elders, we have no excuse. We were evangelists first. I guess we hadn't suffered enough. Then you become an elder. What was I thinking? Why am I don't need this. You know, there are times that I have thought, and maybe I'm the only one who does this, that I thought, you know what, I don't need this. I really don't, people. I can be just fine. I can take me and the wife and the kids and the grandkids, and we can go over here and we can worship God, and I don't need all the headaches. What's in it for me? Why am I doing this? Which, you know, that's not true, because before long I'd be mad at one of the kids, you know, and that kind, and then it'd be down to me and Bev, and I'm not sure about her. That's the way that thing works. But it's kind of a selfish thought that you have. I don't need this. And that's what Peter's doing. We've left everything, our homes, our jobs, our families. What are we getting out? It doesn't look like to be much upside to Peter here. Then the Lord stepped in. Jesus said unto them, verily I say unto you, that ye which have followed me in the regeneration, when the Son of Man shall sit in the throne of his glory, you also shall sit upon 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And every one that hath forsaken houses, or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands for my name's sake, shall receive 100-fold and shall inherit everlasting life. That's what's in it for you, boys. That's what's in it for you. You're going to gain 100-fold and everlasting life. That's what he's offering. That's what the cost is to being a Christian and walking away from everything. Eternal life and 100-fold, an abundant life. What if you don't do it? What do you think everybody we make this pitch to buys it? Jameson knows at an auction not everybody buys. You may pitch it. You may try. But people ain't going to buy it. And you know, everybody we do Bible studies with, they don't obey the gospel. Brethren that are thinking about quitting and walking away because they don't need this no more. Some of them do. They walk away. What's the cost of that? Father, mother, son, daughter. Now I'm going to tell you something about myself, and you're going to feel sorry for me. I was one of these knuckleheads. I really had the idea that if I got my kid to 18 to 20 years old and he left home, I didn't have to worry about him anymore. And you go, oh, the poor slob. Worry about them more at 40 than I did when they were four. And then you got those grandkids that come along. You see, when the kids started growing up, I thought dad's job was done. When they got, no, dad, your job ain't done. You got work to do. And then them grandkids come along, granddad, your job ain't done. One of the first people that we ever sat down and did Bible studies with when I first come to the Houston area in 1979 was here last night. He's a great grandfather. What if you walk away? What if you quit? What about them? What do you think they're going to do? Unless somebody comes along, does Bible study with them, and gets them to go, you're going to lose them. Now, I don't know about your world, but I got these little ones, and I know Desti with that youngest granddaughter. We'd be going down to Walmart. She won't sit where she's supposed to. She wants to be in the basket. And I thought, that's odd, because it can't be comfortable. And I realized that's so she can reach over and get whatever it is she wants. You know, so she was a step ahead of the game. And she'll look at me, and she'll go, Granddad, this is neat. And I go, yeah, it is, honey. And she goes, we're getting it. And Destiny tells me, Dad, you got to learn to say no sometimes to them like that. But that's the way grandparents are. I mean, I remember Alan's girls telling him, stuff that you would have gave us a whipping for, you're getting your camera out and taking pictures of them. Isn't that the most important thing we got? Isn't it really? And I think most of y'all are like me. I think the house is nice, the cars are nice, but that's not the most important thing we got. But that is, them kids, them grandkids, them great-grandkids, the family. That's what's important. And by walking away, you're not only giving up your own soul, you're letting them down. And I don't know about you, but I'm not willing to pay that price. That's too high. I want to keep them all together, and I want to keep them all going. I want them all in the faith. That's what we need. That's what my goal is. Have you counted the cost?